Hello, everyone. Welcome to One More Prime, the Transformers Watch Along. I am Mike Schwartz.
Dad, why is this room filled with smoke?
And black lights?
Because it's spooky season. It's also the same month as TFCon Chicago, right? So I'm trying to focus my intentions so the Transformer toys I really want will appear before me at the convention.
Should you really have that cauldron so close to electronics?
Hang on, Elsa. I think he may be onto something.
Oh, well, go ahead, Emmett. What are you looking for at TFCon?
Well, there's a certain upgrade kit that I like.
Oh, okay. Write that down on a piece of, let's see, where did I put my ancient parchment? Aha! Okay, write it down, throw it in the cauldron, and...
Yeah, hey!
Okay, I only needed a few hairs off the top of your head. Don't worry. Stop whining. Elsa, what toys do you want to manifest?
This is weird.
Come on. It sounds like you want a G1 Cosmos, perhaps?
Sounds like you wrote this dumb Halloween bit instead of a proper intro.
Yeah, Elsa's right. Do some research. Okay, Dad, if we find a certain Power of the Primes Optimus upgrade kit, can I have it?
We'll let the fates decide.
No, bring money. Lots of money.
I'm gonna go dump up this cauldron. Emma, you stay here and watch over Dad.
Roger.
Just put it in the fridge. It's mostly just Gatorade. We are watching Quest for Survival, episode 28 of season 2. Today's guest is Ryan Miller. Ryan is an incredible artist currently showing off his watercolor Transformer, mostly Beast Wars, paintings on Twitter, Instagram, Twitch, all that good stuff. Look for at TGPing, P-I-N-G. He will also be appearing at TFCon Chicago, October 22nd and 23rd. If we meet you there, let's go to Ryan's table and stare awkwardly as he tries to paint Polar Claw.
He be prepared.
Written by Reed Robbins and Peter Salas and airing on November 5th, remember, 1985, this is Quest for Survival. Okay, everybody. We are here with artist Ryan Miller. Ryan, thanks for joining us.
Good evening. How's it going? So yeah, happy to be here. Yeah.
So when we started this podcast, I started to delve a little more into Transformer Twitter, and beside accounts showing toy reveals and stuff like that, I saw so much more art. Like, I knew it was out there. But oh my gosh, there's so many artists and great art.
So many. There really are. It's actually a little difficult to keep up, but it can be done.
But your art definitely caught my eye, and we will divert from the G1-ness a little bit right here because I was really enraptured by your Beast Wars art.
Well, it's still G1.
Yeah,
technically.
There you go. That's technically G1.
Oh, I know.
Right, but thank you. The watercolor paintings, right?
Oh yeah. Beast Wars is one of probably my favorite show.
Yes.
As far as Transformers, I mean, of course we're doing G1, but Beast Wars kind of hit me at this right time when the toys were coming out. I was watching it with my friend. It was before DVDs or DVRs, so like he would record it on a VHS and he'd hand it off to me at school. And
wait, you were VHS dealing? Shame on you.
He would as soon as it aired, he would either drive it over or hand it off to me at school, and I would give it back. We weren't selling it.
I remember exchanging VHS tapes back in like middle school, high school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember that's how I was able to watch a Dragon Ball Z movie before it ever came to the U.S., the movie 13, the one with Janemba.
Okay.
And it wasn't even subbed or anything. It was just Japanese. So I just got the storyline through, you know, all the visuals and stuff like that. I still thought it was great. So that was my first introductions to Dragon Ball Z, and I loved it.
Speaking of VHS's, at one time, right when you know, I got my first computer and I signed on to eBay. I actually bought a entire case of VHSs of the original Transformers cartoon.
Nice.
I think I have them somewhere, but they're really cool because they have all the original commercials of wherever they were airing. I'm not sure what city or what region, but yeah, they have all the commercials on it, like the little weather reports, the bumpers and stuff.
That's awesome. I remember just renting a few episodes from like the local video store, you know what I mean? And so one of the local stores had like the, you know, Transformers the movie, and then like Heavy Metal War, right? And then another video store would have like Fire in the Sky and another one of the Dinobots ones, you know what I mean?
Also too, like in the VHSs, they would usually, I know they did that with the Ninja Turtles, where they would kind of edit two or three episodes together and kind of make them seem like a big movie.
Yeah.
Wonder if they did that with Transformers.
I don't think so. Because I always was like, they only really have like 20 minutes of an episode on this VHS tape. And it was the FHE kind, right?
Oh.
The where, you know, you saw that right across the screen and it was like Family Home Entertainment or whatever. When you saw the FHE scrolling across the screen, then you knew that you were watching something good. So I was always on the lookout for those tapes, whether it was He-Man, G.I. Joe, or Transformers, you know, any one of those things. Then you knew that that's the one that you're looking for.
I have no clue what any of you are talking about.
old stuff.
Yes, old stuff.
But I can't really say that because with Beast Wars, that's getting up there in age too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And for Beast Wars, I didn't really have much exposure to the show until season 3 happened.
Wow.
Yeah, except so it was mostly the toys, except later on we did get a VHS tape that came packaged with one of the toys. Right? So it was the first two episodes of season 2, where was the Fusors and
yeah,
the other one.
Coming of the Fusors?
Yeah, Coming of Fusors, and then the one prior to that. So we wore that tape out.
Oh yeah. Well that has the Western shootout cliffhanger.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, amazing.
So it was a good couple episodes to have. But other than that, I didn't know what was going on. So then I see season 3 and I have no idea what's going on still until season 3, you know, runs its course and they start over again. On Fox or, you know, whatever TV station I was looking at. So it was just having to do, it's like wherever I live, the Fox didn't come in and that's the station that it was always on. And so it's like we had the WB. So that means I was always watching Batman Beyond, you know, all those things, right?
All the good stuff.
Yeah, still lots of good stuff, but I was always missing out on the Transformers. So until much later. So yeah. It was, I would buy toys based off of how cool they were and how cool the bio was, and not based off of if they were in the show or not, because I didn't know. Right?
Well, that's funny because that kind of plays to your art. You know,
exactly.
You're picking characters that were not on the show and
like awesome transmetals.
Yep.
That never were on the show.
Polar Claws in there somewhere, and yeah.
I'm looking at this right now. Yeah, you have this one post where it's Transmetal Waspinator, Air Razor, and oh, I forgot. But those were like three toys I bought at the same time. It's like, oh my gosh.
Yes. Oh yeah. No, and it's really fun using those figures as reference. And I do use them as reference. And so like if you watch me stream, then you'll see them on my desk. I always handle them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so when I have them, I use them. But there's a couple I don't have, like Airhammer or Interrogator. But after I painted them, they go on my shortlist of figures to acquire. But the majority of them that I painted, I do have. And if I don't have the exact right paint scheme, I usually have a repaint of some sort. You know,
the art is expressive enough where it doesn't look like you're drawing off of a model.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the details there, the gestures and everything is expressive enough. And like the watercolors are really cool touch, because I think that kind of helps with the organic nature of kind of Beast Wars.
Yes, I feel like it really does help with the more natural look, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And you had one of your pieces on a cover of like the Beast Wars Annual recently, right?
Oh, yeah. So I had the Beast Wars Annual, and then the last year I had it on a retailer incentive cover too.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so I got lucky that I got two covers of Beast Wars. But the most recent one was the annual, which was I was able to pick what I wanted, but the one I settled on was the main five maximals, which is that was the idea that I wanted to paint them.
Do you have any other comic work coming up?
Let's see. Just more like private commissions, and as far as specific comic stuff, some sequential pages are in the works, but nothing for, it's still private, you know, not a big publisher or anything. No more Transformers work forthcoming, because IDW won't have the license at the end of this, after this year, and all the work has been done.
Right. Well, that means you could get on the ground floor of whatever new publisher picks it up.
Exactly. So, which means if I want to do sequential pages, I need to come up with some Transformer sequential pages, which I do have a script for. I have a couple of scripts and stuff that I'm going to be working through and picking sample pages to do, you know?
If you were to do sequential pages, would you do them in your watercolor style?
Yes, that would be the idea.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That would, it kind of reminds me of Dustin Wynn's art, like on Descender.
Well, you have to send me a link to that one. I'm not familiar.
He's done a ton of art, but there's this book, Descender, and then Ascender with Jeff Lemire. It's an image book, and it's all watercolor sequentials. It's really cool because, and kind of like with your art too, it's like it can be very subtle.
Right.
You know, I think his line work is just using pencils.
That's me. I do.
Okay. Yeah. So he kind of does the same thing, and he could do something where, you know, it's like really bright, so like everything's really washed out. And then if he wants to draw a mech, then he goes in there and just puts all the detail. I will admit I have not read the entire series. I just something gets in the way. But when I look at it, and like the art is amazing. Right. It's really cool. So like, yeah, I'm all in favor of watercolor robots.
Right, I'll check that out. So there are robots though, right? That's what I'm
hearing. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yep. Okay. Yep.
It's like sold, right?
Yep.
Just one question.
Sure.
Are you a fan of Dragon Megatron? If so, are you excited for the upcoming Legacy release?
I am a fan of Dragon Megatron.
Same.
And I am excited. I'm just a little reluctant, right? Because I'm afraid that there's going to be some gimmick that's going to maybe hamper, like, something. You know what I mean?
What can be more gimmicky than Beast Wars?
Well, no, I mean, like an action gimmick, you know, that like, maybe has a lot of springs or something that takes a lot of space that would maybe... I would like the Dragon Megatron to actually kind of be like the most recent Beast Wars Megatron, you know, where it's a leader and it's actually the size of a leader figure and it's not a figure with add-on parts, you know?
I am still okay with like the Optimal Optimus, how...
Oh, yeah, no, I like that, but that's Power of the Primes. So that's going back to Jedi. What's it like? I don't want like Shockwave or Astro Train, where it's kind of a Voyager size figure.
I have the Astro Train. It's not that bad.
I love the figure. I'm not seeing that idea work out for like Transmetal Megatron. That's all.
Yeah.
That's me.
But I think if it's good looking, it might be one of the first Transformers I pre-order.
Ooh. Oh, you don't pre-order Transformers. Okay. I almost only pre-order. Because I'm afraid I'm missing out.
I'm looking for my MacGuffin.
Yeah.
That everyone's searching for, but I want it. Nice.
Well, I think
I like looking in stores. I did pre-order when they like the first Kingdom Wave. Nice. I had to get Megatron and Optimus and
we were in Stony Cheetor. Creek. We were in Stony Creek when you did that, sitting on a rock.
I was. So yeah, we were on a hiking trail. And I was like, we got to finish so I can get a signal so I can order these Transformers.
And I had a wood chip in my foot that had to be pulled out.
Oh, no.
I did something like that for...
And it hurt.
For Ravage, the Pulse exclusive Ravage, the Beast Wars one.
Oh, yeah.
Where it just came...
Well, as of this recording today, they just revealed the Inferno.
Yes, I saw that. That looks great. It's amazing. It looks great.
Did you see that yet?
Yes, I did. I'm very hyped.
Inferno and Armada... Armada Starscream.
Oh, I didn't see that. Is that Voyager? I only saw the. I'm belonging to like a bunch of Beast Wars groups on Facebook, so it was all about Inferno.
Okay.
Starscream looks pretty good, though.
Yeah.
Speaking
of Starscream, he is the reason we get a rare laugh from Soundwave, which is always appreciated. That's a little later in the episode.
Yeah, of course it is.
So. The episode we are talking about is Quest for Survival, which is written by Reed Robbins and Peter Salas. And I looked this up. They only wrote one other episode of Transformers that was Countdown to Extinction.
Oh,
which
not
is way
Oblivion.
Back in season one. That was after the Ultimate Doom.
Oh.
It starts with like the Autobots cleaning up after Earth was nearly destroyed. But with this episode, we begin in some sort of Asian country.
I
know there's a pagoda, there's a brief music cue, but I don't want to really speculate any further.
I don't know where they were going with this, but...
If the hats give it away.
Yeah. But the first Transformers we see are the pesky Insecticons.
I don't like them.
Is this the first time we see the Insecticons, or did they make an appearance earlier?
They made an appearance earlier.
Yeah, they had another episode, what was it called?
Yeah, off the top of my head, this is
a
maybe the fourth time we've seen them.
Okay.
And they had that one where they ate the forest.
Right.
And grew super massive.
Right.
That was the Insecticon syndrome.
I didn't like that one. That one was weird.
Yeah. But it is hard to tell because every Insecticon episode begins like this,
yes.
Where it's always people in a field farming and they come in and just start chomping
down.
Yeah,
they just terrorize them.
Well, at least they don't discriminate because they eat all kinds of crops.
Yeah.
They terrorize all kinds of people.
So we transition from Asia and it's a little tough because the backgrounds are all the same.
Yes.
But now clearly we're in America because they're working the combine and then they have this great line. Them ate locusts, then's Insecticons.
It's obviously America.
And so they're familiar enough with the Insecticons.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like I wonder
if
like every 3 weeks they arrive and blow up their tractors and eat all their wheat.
Lucy? Yeah, it happened again.
Yeah. I'm gonna need to take out another loan to buy another tractor. And then we're in some sort of this looks kind of tropical. Looks seem to be palm trees, but it's the same thing.
Yes.
Insecticons are just eating. Nom, 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 nom. But with this time, the Autobots show for some reason.
Oh, yeah, we get to see, I really like seeing the tank. Why can't I remember his name?
Warpath.
Warpath, yes, thank you. I was just looking at the figure, you know? Oh, man. We get to see him. He doesn't say anything at first, and I was waiting for it, you know?
Oh, yeah.
With the sound effects. And we get that later, but I was waiting for it then. Mm-hmm. Right? So I was happy to see Warpath.
So this crew is actually pretty interesting. It's a mix between season one and season two. Typically they kind of keep them grouped together. So we have Huffer, Inferno, Smokescreen, Trax, Warpath, and who's that on the end, Emmett?
Skids. One of my favorites, because they're obscure.
Boy.
Two, they're a robot in disguise, because they have a pretty good alt mode.
Yeah, I like Skids a lot. And I feel like he got some lines in this episode.
Yeah, one.
Yeah, only one. I think he gets like maybe one more. I think he gets maybe one more line in an episode in season three, I think.
Because this is... He's released between seasons one and two, so that means he wasn't really in the cartoon. Except for two episodes, and this is one of them.
Yeah.
Wow.
So he's one of my favorites.
along with Perceptor and Skylynx.
He always has really cool toys.
He does. He his G1 figure is amazing.
Yep.
One of my favorites. I have him.
Ooh, nice.
And I have the latest one from Legacy.
Yeah, no, that one turned out really well. I'm really happy with that one.
So the Insecticons overpower the Autobots very quickly.
Yes, really.
Because there are so many of them.
Yeah. They take off, and it was interesting that, Smokescreen gives the orders.
So who's in the leadership role? I would have expected Inferno.
Wherever they were, it was close enough to the Ark because they all drove back to the Ark and they're getting repaired. And Smokescreen is filling in Optimus and what's going on. The Insecticons are all over the place. And there's like a billion of them now.
That's what they do.
Yeah, they only explain it in like one line later where it said Scrapper's been busy. So he's just constantly cloning more and more Insecticons. And then we get to this really, really weird thing where Bumblebee, Spike, and Cosmos are on this kind of asteroid-looking thing called Florian 3, where they are mining robotic insecticide. And this is where Skids gets his one line, where he's getting repaired by Hoist. He just says, robotic insecticide.
Yes, the very labeled, very giant, very rare because it's on another planet. Robotic insecticide.
So we have the MacGuffin.
I know. I love, like, it looks like a can of bug spray, but it's huge. It's the size of Spike, and it has the three X's on there.
The warning label. Bug spray.
Robotic insecticide.
I know. Who made that can?
Right. And it's like, how do Transformers know what a can of, you know, humans bug spray, like, looks like? You know what I mean? Yeah. So many questions.
Because that is a shell of Cosmos's multi-purpose head, which is used as an escape pod.
Yes.
The top of the saucer, the head, and I assume that's how they got the can. Because it looks red and round.
Yeah, we'll go with that. That's a really weird moment later on.
Yeah.
So, as they're mining the insecticide, they kind of get caught up with these metal arms, which we'll see more of later. But then they take off, but it seems that Cosmos is covered in spores.
And Spike says he'll never eat a salad again because of that robotic plant thing. That's not good for you, Spike. Not good for you.
The first time I was watching this, I was with Dad downstairs and I was eating lunch. And I had a sub from Jimmy John's that had lettuce on it. And I went, oh, no.
You spit it out. I stand with you, Spike.
No, but the lettuce was really good, so I just kept eating it.
What is it called? The plant thing.
Oh man, I saw it's like Prime kept saying it. I was like,
Morphobots.
Morphobots.
Yeah, at least it wasn't Morphobots lettuce or Morphobots branded lettuce. Good for Iron.
All right, let's not get ahead of ourselves. So we go back to Decepticon headquarters, and here I think is a really good plan by Megatron, because what he's doing is he's having all the Insecticons eat as much as they want, and they kind of get filled up with energy, and then he just kind of siphons all the energy out of them, and then he creates like a surplus of Energon cubes, and then he pays them back with three.
not only that, but the inhabitants of Earth get to starve.
So it's like the precursor to the Power Master technology, at least in the comics, you know.
Oh, we're not that far in the comics. How does that work?
Oh, well, so Power Masters, they eat, you know, food, and it turns into extra energy for their robot partners.
Because they can't process the energy from Nebulon?
Nebulon.
Can't process the energy from it. They use the Nebulons to power them. But the only downside is that the Nebulons have to eat a ton of food.
Yep.
Okay.
Because it's their bodily energy.
Yeah.
And the antagonists in that particular story start off by raiding a buffet. Oh.
Yeah, I think I saw that panel.
Yeah, good times.
All right, we got to get back to reading that.
Yep.
We're not here to talk about the comics. We're here to talk about the cartoon.
Yeah, yeah. So I like how whenever the Insecticons show up, Megatron can't stand them.
Yes.
They're always slightly antagonistic toward each other.
I mean, I can't deal with them either.
They're those employees.
Well, also when they showed up, they established that they were actually on Earth before our main crew of Decepticons, so they're kind of high and muddy. I think Megatron resents them for that.
I think they were part of an escape pod.
But they were kind of allowed to kind of evolve and thrive on their own. So we go back to Cosmos, who's really tangled up with the Morphobot tentacles, and he crash lands into the forest. But yeah, he orders Spike and Bumblebee into his injector pod, which, Emmett, like you mentioned before, it looks like his head.
It's his multi-purpose head.
His head pops off and he has a little parachute and they land in a tree. But they find Cosmos. He's all tangled up and they just kind of like yelling at him, like, stay where you are, Cosmos. We're going to go get some help.
Oh boy, thank you. I can't move at all.
Yeah, and then Cosmos has this great line. Where am I going to go? They drive back to the Ark, and Teletran 1 notices that the Decepticons are building up a lot of Energon. I guess he can kind of sense that.
The secret camera in their base for some reason.
Yeah.
They Decepticons and Autobots always have the cameras that the shows have.
But Decepticons explain it with Laserbeak, but Autobots really don't have an equivalent. But it looks like Bumblebee has brought back some of those spores as well. And when Ratchet's kind of taking a sample, I like how he's on his back, he's on his stomach on a table, and he's giggling as Ratchet removes a sample. And then Perceptor analyzes it, and they realize that
that's me.
They've taken over the entire valley.
Yes.
That quick? There's enough food for that?
I guess.
Is it just self-replicating? Like that one cloning tree?
Maybe. But that takes us to commercial one. And Omega Supreme's not in the episode, but he is in the first bumper. And as we come back from commercial two, the Autobots are assembling a rescue force to go rescue Cosmos, this is like the third episode that they've had to rescue Cosmos, right?
The exact third.
Poor Cosmos.
I know. He's this awesome UFO that can just hang out in space forever. And he's always the guy they need to save.
Low on
they do him
energy.
Dirty. Maybe he uses up too much energy and that always gets him into trouble.
Were they trying to replace Bumblebee with Cosmos then?
That's a good point. Yeah, like whenever Cosmos is around, you don't see Bumblebee too much. He is kind of like now. the little guy.
And he does allow their stories to take place in other, you know, maybe the writers were like getting tired of Earth. You know what I mean? Or
definitely. That's why they went.
That's why they went into space to get the robotic insecticide.
Yeah, let's write a scene where they go to an asteroid.
But also, did you know that Hound was supposed to take the role of Bumblebee in the series?
Like in general?
Yeah, the role of Spike's companion.
Oh yeah, like in More Than Meets the Eye, Spike is with Hound a lot.
See why they wanted this 15-year-old kid to be in a small little yellow cheerful car rather than a...
Yeah, I definitely see why they made that decision in the end, you know.
Rather than an army jeep.
Yeah, rather than a trickster hologram producing army jeep.
Yeah.
Some of you can play arcade games.
Yeah. Well, he's smaller, so he could fit in, you know, like he's not that much taller than a human, so
you don't have to redraw doorways and stuff.
Yeah.
So back at Decepticon headquarters, Laserbeak reports back to Soundwave, and Soundwave, it's funny, he tries to tell Megatron about the insecticide, but then he also tries to tell him about all the metal plants, and Megatron totally brushes that off.
Yeah.
he wants the insecticide, and it sounds like that he wants it to have to use against the Insecticons.
Yes, yeah, so like have it in his back pocket.
Kind of like how Batman always has like a kryptonite ring just in case Superman goes insane. And here's where Perceptor realizes that these metal plants are called Morphobots. They were thought to be extinct, and Prowl taps it.
No,
which just makes it grow.
No, you idiot! It probably got a bit of metal shavings from his finger, and that's how it grew.
So Thrust meets up with the Insecticons, and here's a really weird thing. Did you notice this, kids?
Yes, I had a note about it.
Oh, is it about the airplane mode?
The split in the legs. Yes, I noticed that.
Yes.
But I didn't have time to write that note because I
did notice that. I was like, it's very toy accurate.
Yeah.
I mean, it could be more F-15 accurate.
Yeah. Yeah, there's that. The thing I was looking at is Kickback is still in bug mode, but he has his robot head.
Oh, I missed
Which that. I mean is toy accurate, since you just plop them over and fold out some things and bang, kick back.
But they're all in bug mode, talking to Thrust, and he's just kind of looking up with his robot head. It's weird.
That is kind of weird.
I kind of get what they're going for. They're having a conversation, but it looks like he's just hunched over.
I guess it's I guess a little bit of a callback to how, you know, so many times an Autobot would use their weapons in their car mode or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I can see that.
Well, Paraglide, his face is on the bottom of the front of the jet, yet we don't see that.
that would be even weirder.
Do we see that with Warpath?
Warpath, his head is hidden.
Does he ever do they ever show it animated though? Like on a tank body or on a tank mode with a head sticking out?
I mean, he did say, ow, my head, after rubble fell on him. I'm not sure if that was just like coincidence or intentional, but.
Right. Still funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Thrust is meeting up with the Insecticons, and he tells them that there's insecticide over the mountain, but don't worry, Megatron is going to destroy it because he likes you so much. And of course, they don't believe that. And they zap Thrust, and then Thrust shoots a missile at him. So again, I like how the contentious relationship between the Insecticons and Megatron, that of course they don't believe him. And Kickback actually kicks Thrust.
Yes, and I love that Thrust is like, you know, they take their anger out on Thrust, their frustration on Thrust.
Yeah.
And he just kind of, you know, really undeservedly, but
yeah, he was just a messenger.
Yeah.
No kick back, kick front.
Yes.
Kick back, no kick back, kick front.
You're right. The Decepticons are going to look for the insecticide. They know that it's there, but then they find all the Morphobots, and Megatron seems surprised to find that, but like Soundwave tried to tell him back at the base.
Yeah.
He's like, no matter.
I tried to tell you.
Yeah.
You didn't listen.
Starscream tries to shoot one of the Morphobots to blow it up, and it just ricochets and hits him and knocks him over. This is where we get a Soundwave laugh, where he just goes, hee 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 hee.
Is that the only Soundwave laugh that we get ever?
He did it in an earlier episode.
Okay.
I believe he will do it again. I'm not sure, but maybe.
He does giggle later in this episode, but you don't really hear it as much as you do right here. So the Autobots show up in the valley, and they see the Morphobots, and the Decepticons, they don't fight, they just kind of hide behind rocks. And I like the one shot of Megatron just hiding, and they watch the Autobots kind of do the same thing.
But better.
Right.
Yeah, they actually use all their teamwork.
Yeah.
And there's actual leadership going on.
Mm-hmm.
It's great.
Warpath tries to take some shots. Optimus asks Ironhide if any of your liquids act as weed killers. It is established that, yeah, Ironhide always kind of can shoot things out of his
liquid nitrogen
arms.
Or something. Yeah. Something freezing.
Whatever the plot needs.
It's like Trailbreaker's force fields, which is actually in his tech specs.
Yeah, but this time...
Windcharger's anti-grav thing.
Yeah. Yeah, but this time Optimus is like, I don't know, you got any, like, weed killer?
I'll try, Prime.
Now, of course, I just think, oh, just the same voice. You know what I mean?
I know.
I mean, it's great. It's great. I love it.
I know. When we meet Peter Cullen at TFCon, I may just say, you know what? I really like your Ironhide better. So much more character. We're already at commercial 2.
Oh, yeah. It's like so much starts happening right now.
Yeah. It was kind of a very quick act 2. So our commercial bumpers are Shockwave and Astro Train. So we come back and Blaster is like, hey, let me try something. And
turns into walking boombox.
I know.
No, he turns into an Among Us.
He 15 minutes, 56 seconds.
It's another case of the like robot mode and hybrid of the robot and alt mode. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Wait a second. I don't think that's possible.
The way it transforms.
Well,
no, it is. Just like just fold down, and then you can walk like that.
Yeah, but it depends on how much of the sides are filled in.
Yeah, it doesn't look quite as blocky, right? But yeah. Like technically he can do, a good, what's it called? Like, it's a pretty good representation of what he can do.
Yeah. I have a note, a half blaster or halfster.
I so have an even better name saved for later.
Yeah, he half transforms, so he's just a cassette player with walking legs, and he starts playing Cold Slither, a song that we've heard over and over this season.
Our favorite song. Optimus hates music.
Oh, yeah,
they
yeah.
They all do.
Yeah, Optimus hates music. I love it. He does hate music.
In Blaster Blues, he tells him to shut up. He starts playing his
Blaster,
music.
Shut up.
Yeah. But this plan seems to work. Blaster is riding on top of Bumblebee, and it pacifies the Morphobots enough where then Ironhide can freeze them, and they make their way to Cosmos.
Could you play something a bit nicer?
Yeah.
The beep boop, maybe?
Yeah. What music do you think Optimus likes? What genre of music do you think Optimus chills to when
classical.
They're not fighting Decepticons? Gospel?
Classical.
Oh, classical.
Jeez.
Bluegrass.
Bluegrass. That's good. Emmett, what do you think?
Well, for the pun, I'm tempted to say heavy metal, but no.
Oh, we know he hates that. He'd be holding his ears.
I know.
Yeah, his little spikes.
I think he would oddly like techno. Just very oddly, like, so you don't like this, but you like this.
Yes. He likes the ambient techno, like what you play if you're like reading a book or something, just real chill, just to kind of not a lot of hard driving beats, just kind of nice, maybe old Kraftwerk or something.
Guys, he listens to the background music.
Oh, the background music of this show.
I think the soundtrack to Smokey and the Bandit.
So, Cosmos is towed away by Hoist, and the Autobots escape while the Morphobots break free of the ice.
At 4 frames per second.
Yeah, really slow. And Bumblebee hits a rock and Blaster goes flying off, and it kind of has like the tape wind, the kind of tape slowdown effect. And a really weird cartoony sound. And yeah, this is where Optimus says, good work.
Good lord.
Yeah, good work. You've just gone platinum.
Yes.
Is that a rank or?
No.
I was like, what does he know about music? He hates it.
No, yeah, kids, have you never heard this? Yeah, when an album sells a million copies, it's certified platinum. 500,000 is gold, platinum, and then 10 million is diamond. That's for like Dark Side of the Moon and stuff like that. So
Megachin.
You bring up a good point. I've noticed in this episode that there's a lot of angles, kind of like a slightly low angle, kind of, so they're kind of pointing up at the Autobots and Decepticons, and they all have very very broad chins.
Blaster's gone platinum,
no,
Megatron's gone chin. No, he's gone animated.
Yeah, I was gonna say, no, that's a different show. Chins are another show.
It does look like the precursor to Transformers Animated.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, there's that one shot where Megatron's hiding behind the rock and his chin comes to a point. It's weird because this is a Toei episode and they've animated a lot of these. But yeah, like it seems the models are a little different. They're a little beefier in some shots. And the angles are different. The angles, the way they draw them.
Yeah, they just seem more broad.
The Decepticons intervene. And then Megatron transforms into his gun, and then Megatron fires at and blows up the giant can of insecticide, which I thought he wanted to keep it and to use against the Insecticons.
He can't have it. No one can.
Yeah. Maybe he was like, well, we are making a lot of surplus Energon, so we'll keep him around.
Yeah, actually, I was pretty surprised at that. I really didn't think he was going to, keep it so he could blackmail the Insecticons, but...
Yeah. Almost as if the writers were like, whoops, well, we have, 2 minutes to go in this episode. Let's wrap it up. And then there's this awesome shot of all the Autobots just kind of rolling up. They're just kind of strutting into battle.
I mean, it's just walking and then talking.
The Morphobots, they grab Megatron. They wrap around his legs and start pulling him toward him. And this leads into this very bizarre ending where they're trying to save Megatron. And then at the same time, the Insecticons show up finally. And they're like, hey, Megatron was lying. There is something beyond the valley. And look, it's this delicious feast.
Starscream is legally obligated not to fire at it.
Yeah, and I like how when they show up that Megatron is like, oh, these noble creatures have come to save us despite the danger to their own lives.
Shut up.
Yeah, and they start to go and start like, no, we just see a buffet. And then the Insecticons, you know, the billions of them, fly down to try to start eating the Morphobots. And the Morphobots spring off like this Venus flytrap looking mouth. And they eat the entire army.
And they eat them.
I know. That was quite a twist. I was not expecting that. It was quite shocking.
So at this point, I'm wondering when Soundwave is going to pull a blaster.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, he could have done that and saved everyone.
So what the heck? You know?
And they were all hiding when Blaster was doing that, so Soundwave would have known the trick.
Based on his transformation, he could have done it too.
Yeah. Maybe he also doesn't like the Insecticons, and he's like, you know,
right.
Yeah, what's coming here.
That's it. Well, or any time when they were being wrapped up by the Morphobots themselves before the Insecticons showed up. Like, Soundwave could have stepped in any time. he could pick this moment, you know?
But instead, they just watch all the Insecticons get devoured. And then the main three, Kickback, Shrapnel, and Bombshell, they escape.
Yeah, of course they survive.
And now they decide to, I don't know how they scooped up all the Morphobots. I'm not sure how they did that. Maybe they had very large tongs or something. They load all the Morphobots into this. Go ahead, Emmett.
No Mega Supreme.
Right.
I told you I had a good name.
Yeah. It's the shuttle that I guess I don't know where they've had this part, but yeah, it looks a little like Omega Supreme, but not quite. I'm glad it wasn't him because they would have eaten him from the inside out.
Yeah, it's like you could have flown around the asteroids with, you know, without Cosmos, like using up all his fuel.
Yeah.
So much raw fuel to actually send it to a planet full of robot insects.
Well, yeah, that's another weird bit of morality here. They willingly shoot this ship full of the Morphobots toward a planet of robot insects. So there is that genocide? Are they're or at least disrupting the entire ecosystem of another planet?
Well, Transformers logic is and morality is a bit skewed because sometimes they can just blow up robots left and right that are even Cybertronian.
Right. Yeah, we've had this debate many times where, like, if they're drones or if they're
not named characters.
Yeah. So I guess it's okay as this episode ends where they're just launching this they're just potentially dooming a planet. And what planet is this?
Optimus, you did what?
Yeah.
How did I not know about this when you sent it off to commit genocide? Well, Prime, I
but Prime.
Yeah.
But Prime.
And then this episode, which got very odd very quickly, ends on a very odd note where there's still like four Morphobots in the Ark and they're closing in on Perceptor.
You're like, a scientist.
Were those from the spores then? From earlier?
And that's how it ends.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Maybe they were the spores that he was examining.
I knew that. I knew that from the start.
Okay.
I was like, you're a scientist. You should have kept them in cryogenic stasis or whatever since ice did freeze them.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then that's the end of Perceptor, and that's the end of the episode.
Yes, for all we know, Perceptor's dead. Like the little kids watching this back in 1985.
Oh my gosh.
No.
He appears in the movie. He's fine.
Yeah, he's okay.
Really? We get confirmation that he survived.
Yeah.
Again, that transcends immortal.
He's in the movie and survives the movie.
Yeah. And then the episode ends. We have the cool Devastator bumper. And that's it. That is the end of Quest for Survival. So Ryan, as our guest, we usually give a rating to these episodes, 1 through 10 Energon cubes. You go first. What did you think of Quest for Survival?
Okay. Let's see. there were some things that were kind of weird. I'm going to give it probably like a 6 out of 10. So I was okay with the opening with the Insecticons and that the basis for that. And then the MacGuffin of the hairspray can. Like, really? Yes. Kind of bothered me.
If it's from another planet, it must be just right.
It's like
the
you couldn't think of something. It's like, sure. I kind of get it that a can is kind of easy to animate and stuff like that. But it's like, what? Come on, guys.
It was one of the odder MacGuffins.
So I detract points for that. I know it's like silly and it can be fun, but I don't know. I guess I like my Transformers to be a little bit more serious, right? Mm-hmm. Or it's like I like humor, you know, and stuff like that. But I don't know. Maybe I just don't get it. Like with the visual, was it supposed to be this like funny visual gag, and it was lost on me, you know? So 6 out of 10, and I think so. The MacGuffin, I feel like, could have been worked in better. But the things I did like was the aggression between the Insecticons and the rest of the Decepticons, really.
Yeah, that's
how much Megatron twists everything behind everyone's back. He doesn't stop. And I loved it, you know? It really, I guess a lot of episodes, right, could benefit from being longer, right? And I kind of wished we could explore more of the inner workings of the Decepticons versus the Insecticons, you know, the inner conflict.
Yeah, they're not in enough episodes to do that. They're just kind of the thorn in Megatron's side, and he'll use them when he needs them.
Right. And maybe it's not just the Insecticons, but I like the inner strife between all of the, you know, Decepticon factions. You know? And so I would really like to see more of that. And I feel like it was hinted at it, and then I was just a little disappointed that we didn't get to see more of that. And then, you know, I feel a little disappointed that all of, like, you know, 99% of the Insecticons were destroyed. you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and, you know, via a, you know, twist, right? So, and the, you know, the climax, I felt, was a little... There's just so many things happening all at once. And I know they had to wrap it up within 20 minutes or whatever. But I feel like 6 out of 10, you know, it's a little above average, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, let's say 5 is average. Mm-hmm. So what would you, do you guys have a offer a rating yourself?
Oh, yeah.
Yes,
oh, yeah. Yes, Emmett, you want to go?
Okay.
Go ahead.
Yes, I would say 6.5. It's
okay.
It's an episode, all right. It has some maybe unintentionally funny things.
Right.
And concept was all right. So 6.5. I like how Skids and Perceptor were in it.
Right. Elsa, how about
you? My boys.
Yeah, 6.5. Pretty much the same reason as Emmett's. It wasn't too bad, but it could have been better.
Could have, it's like so there's some good ideas in there, but could have been better.
Yeah.
It's kind of the undertone.
Yeah. I'm going to go 7.
Okay.
Because I watched this a few times, and I liked it better every time I watched it. I really like Megatron's scheming. He has a really good plan with the Insecticons. I like how his whole plan is just stealing Energon from behind their back.
Yes. From his own team.
Yeah. And
he
hangs back and watches the Autobots get into trouble with the Morphobots. And the weird thing aside of where he decides to blow up the insecticide, I thought this was one of his better plans.
Gotcha. No, actually, I totally agree with you there. So Megatron's scheming was a high point.
Yes. And
so definitely for me. Yeah.
And I always love when Cosmos is featured. I wish he'll be in an episode where he doesn't have to get rescued.
Where he struts into a mall.
Yeah. When he's in New York, he didn't get captured. He chased Starscream through a mall. But then also, I just love this really weird, chaotic ending where we just see the entire Insecticons get mauled by invasive robotic plants. Okay. That's how we're going to end it.
It's like, oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
He is now dead.
Because, like, usually things kind of wrap up and kind of reset, and they kind of, it ends with them laughing, but this time it ends with Perceptor screaming in panic. He's about to get torn up by the Morphobots. Yeah.
He doesn't, but. I guess they had a spare rocket.
Yeah. It has a little dark note with that, which I appreciated for watching so many episodes like we do. So, yeah, I appreciate this episode.
Yeah.
Ryan, thank you for joining us.
Of course. It's been fun.
Do you have anything, do you have any shows coming up, or do you have anything to recommend to watch or read?
I just read James Roberts' Eugenesis for the second time. So that's his fan work that he did before he started writing More Than Meets the Eye.
Oh, okay. What era does it cover?
So it's post G1, right? So imagine it could be a sequel.
Which one, Japanese or American?
So it seems to take place after, Marvel G1, G2.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Marvel. Yeah, Marvel. So it features Rodimus as the leader, right? At this point. Mm-hmm. And, in the Marvel comics, Prime has died a few times. And at this point, he has stayed dead, right? So it's after all that, the Autobots have a small colony on Earth still. And then they have a holdout on Cybertron. And they're still, Decepticons are still large. So that's the setting. And I feel like it just does a lot of things really well. So I would recommend it. I read it on my way to and from Emerald City Comic Con a month ago.
Okay. How was it available?
Oh, so I had gotten it via PDF, and I had saved it to my computer a long time ago, and then I uploaded it to my phone, and I read it on my phone. And so it was widely available, and I'm sure it still is up. And if it's not readily available, I'm sure if you just ask James nicely on Twitter, he'll send you a PDF. I would love to get it in print, though. I know there were a few copies that were in print because it was for, I think it was printed for a TF Nation or something.
Okay, cool. And then, speaking of shows, you will be heading up to Chicago for TFCon.
That's
in October,
so I'm really excited about that too.
Yeah, and we're going.
Yeah, so can't wait to see you guys.
We will meet without any electronic interference.
Right. We'll record something real quick when we're there.
Yeah, for those that are still listening. This has been quite an achievement in editing on my part. So you're welcome, listeners.
Yeah, I can't wait to listen to the edit.
You made it.
Oh my gosh. I can't wait. I'm gonna know what went into it too, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm going to be extra, I'm going to admire it even more.
Oh, great. Yeah. I'll do my best. All right, so we'll wrap up, and we'll see you in the Windy City, and that's the weekend. It's October, is it
21st? I think so.
Yeah, we'll be at the show on Saturday. Yes. We're just doing the Saturday only.
Oh, okay, so I'll be there Saturday and Sunday, but I look forward to seeing you that Saturday. Yeah.
All right, sounds good. All right, well, Ryan, thanks for joining us, and thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next week on One More Prime. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye.